Okay, very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Now you can turn to page 1. We will continue with our puja chanting. We will start from Vandana. Today is the 1st of May, supposed to be Labor Day, but our class is still on. So traffic condition is a lot better because of the holiday. Okay, we will now chant the Vandana. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majjhapamadatthana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Now we are chanting the Padipa Puja, offering of light. Ganna sarapaditena dipena tamadang sina tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonudang ganda sambarayutena dopena hang sugang hena pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bhajana mutamang vanna ganda guno petang etang kusuma santatin pujayami munindasa siri pada sarorohe pujemi putang kusumena nena punena matena cha hotu mokhang rupang milayati yata idang me kayo tatayati vinasa bhavang adivase tono bante paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivase tuno bante pale parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivase tuno bante bojanang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang. Now we are chanting the puja aspiration based on our understanding of all these puja offerings. Significance of offering the light to the Buddha. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition as soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas of power. Then, number 7, sharing and transform merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will pay respect to Triple Gem. Badang Pujemi. Dhammang Pujemi. Sanghang Pujemi. Okay, you can be seated. For those who are new, I have to explain a little bit. What we did just now was the puja. Puja means devotional offering or practices that the Buddha recommend. As a Buddhist, we need to have this devotional practice or cultivation to develop our spiritual faculties. The spiritual faculty of sadha, which is faith in the Buddha and his teaching, is very important. Then, followed by the other spiritual faculty. From the faith, you develop the spiritual faculty of virya, the spiritual zeal to go this way, because you see the importance of this teaching. You understand that the Buddha is a very unique being. He is not only enlightened, he is perfectly enlightened, fully enlightened. Means you can say, at the time when he arrives, he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. So to have him as your guide, as your teacher, you would have considered yourself very lucky. Then you will have a lot of gratitude and respect for such a great being. So because of that, your faith will become very different, very stable. Then when your faith is very stable, you will understand the spiritual teaching. Where the faith will give rise to the understanding. Then as you understand him well enough, together with his beautiful teaching, this teaching can give rise to wisdom, to liberate your mind, so that as a human being living in this world, you don't have to suffer anymore. Whatever life condition you encounter, as you go through life, as you live life, you will have this wisdom that protect you from becoming afflicted, miserable, and unhappy. So nothing in this world can make you feel bad to develop the negativity of mind state or to become afflicted, miserable, and suffer. Fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation always cease. That's the beauty of this teaching. And this teaching, when you understand, it not only make you enlightened, it can also transform you completely, character-wise, personality-wise, so that you will become a different living being, human being. Then with this understanding, your life will change. It will transform you into a very, very virtuous being with a lot of understanding. So you will become like noble ones with all the noble character, understanding, and various beautiful mind state of enlightened being. So this is how it can help you improve your life, transform your life, change your life, and make you a better person. Then you can be a blessing to all. So these are the advantages of understanding this teaching. Then the first part, the puja part or devotional practice, also involves chanting. We chant salutation to the Buddha, to all the great beings, Dhamma Sangha. We pay respect to Triple Gem. We take refuge. We renew all precepts. Then when we make offering, we rejoice. All these are meritorious actions, very wholesome. Then after that, we meditate. After we meditate, we will have our Dhamma sharing. After the Dhamma sharing, you can straighten your views. You can develop further understanding the faith. Then you can also rejoice. Yeah? Then after that, you can share merits, transfer merits. Then as a fellow Buddhist or Kayanamita, you can also develop a lot of wholesomeness through helping out in whatever activity, Buddhist activity or Dhamma activity. So service is part of the 10 meritorious actions. Service to the sasana, service to the community, service to humanity and society. So all these are virtue, goodness, wholesomeness. So all these you will get to develop them and cultivate them with understanding when you attend such lessons or classes. We call it the Dhamma Sharing Tuesday class. So after this, we're supposed to have our meditation. So today I can still give you half an hour of meditation. We will off the light. Then after that, for those who already know how to meditate, you straight away start. For those who are new, the three of you, I will give you some instruction. If you know how to meditate on your own, you got your own method and technique, you can also go ahead. No need to wait for anything. But if you want to listen to instruction, then you can close your eye, then listen attentively. Okay. First of all, I will teach you a skillful means to train your mind so that the heedless thinking can be temporarily resolved, so that you can develop the ability to decondition this heedless thinking or mental activity that constantly arise in you when you try to meditate, because you lack the five spiritual faculty and you lack training. You are not mindful most of the time. Under such circumstances, I will have to teach you this mind-sweeping method, followed by loving-kindness, metta, then finally followed by anapanasati, or mindfulness of the in and out breath, to stabilize the silent mind, the mind that is deconditioned and trained. Okay, make sure you have a stable posture. Then relax body and mind completely. Feel it soothingly relax. Then after that, you close your eye. Make sure your backbone is straight. Then just breathe in, breathe out naturally. whatever arises, just let it be thought or feeling or emotion or whatever. Just let it arise. Don't resist. Don't fight. Yeah? You just maintain silence within. Just aware. Yeah? Aware means silent without thought. Yeah? But you cannot do that, then the mind sweeping method will help you. Yeah? So now you close your eye, relax body and mind, then maintain attention at your forehead. Just feel. Don't think, feel. Just feel. If there's any tension, any tightness, or any stress within, you just release it. Feel it soothingly, relax and release into it. Just relax and allow it to be. Yeah? Feel it soothingly, relax. Then you sweep your mind down to your eye muscle. Do the same. Feel, relax everything. Feel your eye muscle soothingly, relax. Then you shift it down to your facial muscle, each and every strength feel, and just relax into it. Yeah. So as you sweep down, you will be more and more relaxed, leading to more and more peaceful mind state. Then after that, in order to help you relax more easily, you can visualize yourself emitting a radiant smile. Facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. Then you can visualize yourself with a radiant smile. You have joy. Then when you have joy, naturally the muscle relaxes. Then you are peaceful. You are just relaxed. Then you can continue with the loving kindness radiation of mind. You can repeat following what I recite. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. When you recite it, you must feel it. When you recite, may I, this body and mind of mine, you must feel your entire body and mind. All of the cells within your physical body and all of your mind state. And then, be well and happy, well and happy. You must feel the well-being and happiness within all of your cells, within your physical body and your mind state. So this will help you develop the inner well-being. So mind-sweeping method bring about inner peace, then metta bring about inner well-being. So you feel yourself peaceful, calm, having this well-being, then you can repeat, may I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy. You just feel it, no more thinking. Then you continue to radiate this loving kindness and metta. May it too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. Feel that your body completely, no physical and no mental suffering. May its mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then after that, you can radiate this similar metta to your loved ones. Your loved one can be your parents, your brothers, sisters, your good friend, or your neighbor. So you radiate to them all. You can visualize them. May my loved ones too be well and happy, well and happy. May their mind states too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May they all too also be well and happy. Well and happy. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. then you can radiate this metta to all beings within this vicinity. May all beings within the vicinity of this house and the whole of SS2 together with Kayanamitas, may they all too be well and happy, well and happy. May they all too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free of all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we extend this metta. May all beings within the whole of SS2, Petalingjaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, and Mother Earth, and all beings throughout the entire solar system, followed by all beings within the entire galaxy, then all beings within the entire existence of the whole universe, may they all too be well and happy, well and happy. May they all too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then you can come back to your facial muscle. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. You feel your facial muscle relax, just allow it to be and just feel. Then you sweep it down to your neck, feel, relax, shoulder, feel, relax, then your hand, feel, relax, then come back to shoulder, feel, relax, then sweep it down to your chest or heart area. Just silence your mind and feel. You can detect your heartbeat or any vibration within. You can just silence your mind and stay with it. Be aware. If you are new, if you have not developed the training, then maybe you just relax the entire body and mind. Just feel. Feel the heart area. Feel like you feel your forehead. If there's any tension, any tightness, or any stress within, you just feel it relax, soothingly, relax, relax, and relax. Then you can sweep it down to your stomach, feel, relax, do the same. Then your abdomen, feel, relax. Then your buttock, feel, relax. Then your leg, feel, relax. You can reverse all this mind sweeping method. From the leg, feel, relax. Then buttock, feel, relax. Then you sweep it up to your abdomen, feel, relax. Then your stomach, feel, relax. Then you move it up to your heart or chest area, feel, silence everything and just relax into it. You can stay there, you stay there. You can't, you continue to sweep upward. Then you sweep it up to your shoulder, feel, relax. Hand, feel, relax. Back to shoulder, feel, relax. Your neck, feel, relax. Then you sweep it up to your facial muscle, feel and relax. Then after that, you sweep it up to your eye muscle, feel, relax. Then your forehead, feel, relax. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. Then you silence everything. Now I will teach you how to stabilize this silent mind that you have developed through the mind sweeping method, so that you are aware most of the time. So this skillful means is anapanasati, means you develop mindfulness of the in and out breath. So like you feel your forehead, now you feel your nostril. Yeah. Relax and breathe in, breathe out naturally. So when you are silent, you can be aware of your breathing. So the moment the mind detects the breathing, like the instruction from the Buddha, breathing in, you are fully aware. Then breathing out, you are fully aware. Yeah. Just continue this training. Initially, if you have not trained, you will come to realize you are hardly mindful. Most of the time, you are lost in thought. Within split second, the anapanasati is gone. But don't worry. Every time the mind wanders off, you just patiently bring it back. Bring it back. So if you are patient enough, not long, this anapanasati will stabilize. Then your mind will become very calm and very peaceful. Then most of the time it's just aware of the in and out breath. Yeah. Then the silent mind will stabilize. Yeah. Then when this happens, you will experience various mind phenomena. Yeah. The first most common one is called piti. Piti is a type of mental joy or spiritual calmness. It's a mental peace, spiritual calmness. And sometimes people call it spiritual rupture, a rupture within the mind. You feel very good. So this is the outcome of a trained mind that is in sati, that is mindful of the in and out breath without thought. When you are able to be mindful without thought of the breathing, then you will become peaceful. And you will experience this piti, spiritual calmness or spiritual joy born of the meditative mind. Then you continue to relax into it and silence everything. Then it will become more refined, more quiet, more peaceful until this sati becomes transformed further. From piti, it becomes sukhang. Sukhang is a more refined type of blissfulness, peacefulness of mind. You feel it so nice, so blissful, that you would like to meditate. So this state can arise. So when it arises, you again relax into it and silence everything. Just train your mind this way until finally this mind is it will become on its own, very quiet, very still. So we call this paucity, tranquility of mind, or stillness of mind, or the silent mind. And when you reach this state, your mind has developed sati. So it will try to stabilize on its own without an object of meditation. When you hit that state, technically you don't need the breathing to make you mindful. You don't need anapanasati anymore because the mind has entered sati. Then after that, you use this silent mind to meditate. Then you will develop a lot of understanding, a lot of wisdom. Okay, I will let you meditate on your own. Then later on, I will ring the bell when the 30 minutes is up. The instruction given, you don't have to try to remember. Just listen attentively and do, because they are all in the transcript book. So go back and read the transcript book if you still have not done it. The transcript book will explain everything very clearly. But this transcript book is a typical Thursday class transcript. So most of them are meditative in instruction. So all the instructions are actually there. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who enough, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Then turn to page 6 of the chanting book. We are now chanting the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samantha Chakawalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Munirajasa Sunantu Sakamokkhadang Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Iti Wa Arahang Samma Sambuddho Jacarana Sampanno Sugato Lokavido Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusana Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehi Paseko Opanayiko Pachatang Veditabo Vinohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Ujjupatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Yadidang chatari purisa yogani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato saukasango Ahuniyo pahuniyo Dakiniyo anjali karaniyo Anuttarang punyaketang lokasati Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Triple Gemma. Discussion. I think we finished chapter 15 last week. So this week we'll be doing chapter 16, then to page 298. Some saline characteristics of Buddhism. So this is the section on the teaching. It continues. For those who are new, you don't have the books. I think you can refer to the soft copy. You have the soft copy. You text it over, so that they can. No. The whole book is there. Yeah, the whole book. Oh, never mind. They have the whole book. Never mind, don't worry. If you don't have the book, you can just listen attentively. So this chapter is quite interesting, actually. After that, I think is PG or no? Oh, PG chapter 20 on karma. Well, karma got two parts. I think chapter 19 also karma. Okay, maybe another three more chapters. Okay. Tonight, who is supposed to be doing it? Alicia finished your day. Oh, didn't nominate. Then I supposed to do it. Okay. I will do it. Then next week, I think we decide first. Who wants to volunteer the next week on? Oh, don't worry. The next, they say they want to chant the special puja for BN to lose. I say no need. Yeah, I know. So we invoke for a good government, government with good governance. Never mind, nature has its way. So things will work out accordingly. Oh, next week one is very good, no. Four Noble Truth, no. Who wants to do? Chapter 17, Four Noble Truth. Hey, very good. Dhamma Cakkappavattana Sutta. Nobody want, nobody want, then I take. This one is different one. This one is a detailed one. Okay, never mind. Whoever want, text me. Otherwise, I can still take it. Then after that, we got PG, who will take care of chapter 19 and 20. Yes, the topic on karma is very interesting. Oh, karma got three chapters. From 18 onward, it's already karma. So 18, 19, 20, you want to take all, or you want to split down? not so ambitious. See, Vivian said take all. Sadhu. Okay. So we will do chapter 16 first. Okay, page 298. Some saline characteristics of Buddhism. Well expounded is the Dhamma by the Exalted One, to be self-realized with immediate fruits, inviting investigation, leading to Nibbana, to be comprehended or to be understood by the wise, each for himself. So this one is actually based on the salutation to the Dhamma. When we chant the salutation to the Dhamma, Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo, this is the one. So well expounded is the Dhamma by the Buddha or the Exalted One. And the characteristics of this Dhamma, they are stated very clearly. So the Buddha said, this Dhamma, if you realize it, you will experience all this. This Dhamma is sanditiko. Sanditiko means can be realized in the here and the now. You don't need to wait till death to realize it. Yeah, you can become enlightened before you die. So this is the most assuring. Yeah? Then the next one is akaliko. This Dhamma is akaliko in the sense that it is beyond thought, beyond mind. So if you are to meditate, to cultivate, and you come to realize this aspect of the Dhamma, then you will know this is the real realization, understanding. Because this part, when you realize it, is without thought, without mind. It just awakens, it just understands. Then it is always with the cessation of form and mind. You will go through the cessation. Otherwise you cannot realize the state that is beyond thought, beyond mind. So initially for the sainthood way, it's just a glimpse of cessation, one moment of cessation. But it's powerful enough to awaken that form and mind. So these two characteristics is very important. Then the third one is Ehi Paseko. The Buddha said, this Dhamma can stand up to investigation. You can come and investigate it. That's why he said, inviting investigation. Then finally, the last characteristic is Opanayiko. Opanayiko means leading inward to the heart to realize the enlightenment. Because it leads inward to the heart, then you will be able to realize the true mind, the gateway to your nature. That's how you can realize Nibbana. Then can only be comprehended by the wise, each for themselves. So this aspect is Pachetang Veditapo Vinohiti. So the Buddha say this Dhamma is Pachetang. If after you go through all this cultivation, then you think you are already enlightened, then you have to check, because there is no need to think. The one that really went through and realizes it, there is no doubt, because the wise one, they will understand. So this can only be realized by the wise, each for themselves. So you don't need to doubt, no need to confirm or seek certification, confirmation and all those things. The form and mind that goes through, they will understand. So that is the unique saline characteristics of the Buddha's teaching. This noble truth that he has taught, the Four Noble Truths, can lead you to the realization of this Nibbana, the unconditioned. He called it the enlightenment. So this enlightenment has its very unique saline characteristic. And these are the characteristics of the true Dhamma. If you have realized the true Dhamma, you will have all these characteristics. So this is the best check. If you want to confirm whether you really have the Dhamma or not, whether you really awaken or not, this is where the teaching highlight to you. And you have to check clearly whether what you have come to realize conform with what the Buddha has proclaimed to you. If it conform, you will understand. And for the wise one, they straight away will understand. But the moment they read, they will rejoice. Yeah, this is what happened. This Dhamma is such. Sanditiko means no need to wait till death. You can realize it in the here and the now. That it is akaliko. It is beyond thought, beyond mind. The one that realizes it. It has got nothing to do with your thought process. has nothing to do with your mundane mind. It's just an awakening. The mind insight into phenomena and realizes it and sees. Then it can stand up to investigation, because this teaching, this Dhamma that the Buddha has taught us, the essential Dhamma, everything, if you were to put it to test, it will stand up to investigation. It's based on truth. Truth is whatever that can explain the way things are, is the truth. So this Dhamma is very unique, because it is the truth. Yeah. So it will stand up to investigation, then it will lead inwards to be realized by the wise each for themselves. So all these are very unique characteristics. Then we move on to the actual teaching, foundation of Buddhism. The Four Noble Truths, which the Buddha himself discovered and realized to the and revealed to the world, are the chief characteristic and the unshakable foundation of Buddhism. That's the reason why, for those who understand, they will know the essence of the Buddha's teaching is just this Four Noble Truths. And it's called the essence because it is from here that all his other teaching, the essential Dhamma that he has taught the monk 2600 years ago, comes about. Yeah. All of his teachings spin off from the Four Noble Truths. Nothing is apart from the Four Noble Truths. That's why this Four Noble Truths is very comprehensive, very complete, and very powerful teaching. And the reason why the Buddha called it Four Noble Truths and not Universal Truth is because these are truth. When you understand, it will make you noble ones. That's why it's called the Noble Truth. The Arya Satcha. Arya are noble ones. Satcha are truth. Arya Satcha, Noble Truth. Noble ones are beings that are very noble in all aspects of their life. They are very noble in the way they understand life. Means they have right view, right understanding. They understand all of the nature's law that governs life and existence. That's why they are very wise and very noble in that sense. They understand life completely. Then the other aspect is, they are very noble in the way they conduct themselves. They have noble speech, noble thought process, and they act in a very noble and wise manner. That's why they have right thought, right speech, right action, followed by the four right effort, constantly purifying. Okay. Then also, because they have this right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, they will live their life accordingly, giving rise to right living. That's why the Noble Eightfold Path Factor, they have them all. Then they are ever mindful, heedful. That's why they have right mindfulness. And they have stabilized this mindfulness until it has become so stable. They have this mind that is unshakable, unwavering, collected. So we call it samadhi. So this samadhi is not a focusing concentration, no. It's the stability of mind that is unwavering. Unwavering and unshakable. It's very stable. It's very collected. That is what samadhi is all about. The collectedness of mind, the stability of mind, that's why it's unshakable, unwavering. So this samadhi can allow you to see things as they are, to awaken, to insight into truth, into the universal characteristics of nature, especially the three universal characteristics of impermanent or anicchang, then suffering state or dukkhang, and finally is of course anatta, the non-self or empty nature of phenomena. And anatta is very deep in meaning. Its deepest meaning is nothing within the conditioned world is a permanent unchanging entity that you can cling on to, hold on to, grasp on to and say, this is me, this is I. That's the reason why they say anatta is non-self. No, it's not only non-self. Non-self is only small part of anatta. The real meaning of anatta is within the conditioned world. Everything is dependent, originating, conditioned, arising. That's why it's not a permanent unchanging entity that will never change. That will always remain in that state. No, because this is a conditioned world. And because of that, it is anatta. Means anatta means it has these characteristics of change. That's why impermanent is within anatta. Then it follows nature's law. If you want things your way, which is not nature's way, not in accordance with nature's law, then you will suffer. Because that is not the way of things. That's not the way things are. Nature has its own nature's law that governs all of phenomena, all of conditioned arising phenomena, dependent originating phenomena. So you cannot want things your way. Want things your way means you don't understand nature's law. Then you want it to be otherwise. And when you cannot get what you want, what follows is suffering, affliction. That's the noble truth. That's why when you realize that it is not a permanent, unchanging entity, you will understand the universal characteristics of impermanent and suffering, dukkha, immediately. The other way around is the moment you see impermanent, insight into impermanent, then you will know what the Buddha meant by dependent originating, condition arising. Where this is the condition wall. Everything is just like that. Then straight away you will come to realize the other two characteristics. Dukkha, which is suffering, and empty nature of existence, non-self nature. So all this will become very clear. That is the uniqueness of the Buddha's teaching. Then the moment you are clear about this, you will know who you are, what you are, the unreality of this so-called human being, a living being, the form of mind, then you will start to have a different perspective and understanding of who you are and what you are and what is this fire aggregate of form of mind all about, as explained by the Buddha in his teaching. There are two aspects to the fire aggregate of form of mind. The Buddha taught them at two levels. First aspect is as a human being, you have a physical body, and you have a mind. And the Buddha said, the physical body is the form, the physical form. Then you have a mind which is a consciousness. This consciousness or mind is capable of many things. But he summarized them into four basic aggregates or function. He said our mind can feel. There is a feeling aggregate. Our mind can also perceive. So there is a perception aggregate. Then our mind can also create mental activity, mental states, mental thought process, mental feelings, emotions and all those things, including all of your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, and even your peaceful state of mind, meditative calm, meditative stillness, tranquility, then the wholesome mental states, your joy, your pity, your sukha, all these are within the mind. So the third aggregate is called sankhara, the Buddha said. Everything that your mind can do, including feeling and perception. And this aggregate is very powerful. This is all-encompassing. Then the last characteristic of mind, the last thing that your mundane mind can do, is to become conscious of things. That's why the last aggregate is viññāṇaṁ. Viññāṇaṁ is consciousness. Because we have our physical senses, five physical senses and the mind. Together we have the sixth sense. So upon contact of the mind with any of the senses, it can give rise to consciousness. We can become conscious of what we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we tactile feel and think. So these four aggregates of mind, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnanam, or in English is feeling, perception, activity of mind, mental states, and whatever that the mind can do together with consciousness. So these four plus the physical body become the five aggregates of the form of mind. The first aspect as a human being or as a living being. Then the second aspect is more important. The mental five aggregates of form of mind. The Buddha said within every moment of consciousness, whether seeing consciousness or hearing or smell, taste, tactile or thought, there is also the five mental aggregates within the consciousness. So as we know, there are only four within mind. Then how did the fifth aggregate of rupa comes to be? When you meditate and when you understand how the external form enters the mind through your perception aggregate or sanya aggregate, then you will come to know everything that you come to perceive within the phenomenal world, the external form, they are mind-made. Mind-made are they. So you can actually go through the perception aggregate to see them. And this perception is the one that brings the external mental form into the mind. So together with the four aggregates of mind and the mental aggregate of perception, the external form makes five. This is how each and every moment of consciousness, the five mental aggregates of form and mind, they will arise. And this is the five aggregate that the Buddha is talking about within the dwelling or Paticca Samuppada teaching. So this mental five aggregate is also the final summary of the first noble truth. He said, without wisdom, without understanding, you will have self-delusion. And when you are deluded, self-delusion will condition you to grasp and cling and hold on to this five aggregate of form and mind, first aspect and second aspect, thinking that it's real, it's you, that you exist as a five aggregate of form and mind. And the five aggregate of form and mind, even the mental one, is real. That's why in the final summary, the Buddha said, in short, he summarized all of dukkha. He said, this five aggregate of grasping, upadana khandas, born of self-delusion, give rise to suffering. So that's the final summary. So if you can understand the final summary, you will understand his teaching completely. So to understand the final summary, you have to put it to test, investigate into it. How do we put it to test? We have to understand what the Buddha meant by the five aggregates. That's the two aspects that I have explained to you. And these two aspects, the textbook never write. Very few people understand. They can recite and rattle to you the five Pali words. Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana. But very few people understand their meaning. That's why they cannot understand the two aspects of the five aggregate of form and mind. And because of that, you cannot put it to test. Otherwise, the moment you put it to test, then you will know the Buddha is right. His teachings stand up to investigation. So take for example the first aspect, the physical body as the form. If you attach to this form, deludedly believe that this physical body belongs to you, what will happen? This self-delusion will give rise to suffering. And then the Buddha said, how did you suffer? Because if you believe this is you, you have a problem. That's the reason why the Buddha, when he saw the four signs and left the palace, he straight away knew. Because that time he still think this physical body is him. That's why when he went out of the palace, together with his attendant, when he saw a very, very sick person, a very, very old person, and a dead person, he asked the attendant, How come this person is like that? So fragile, so weak, so sick, and look so haggard. Everything is like waiting to die. Then when he saw a dead man, then the attendant told him, he is an old man. He is already very old. Then the other one is very sick. Then the other one is already dead. They are sending for cremation. So the Buddha at first can't understand. What do you mean by old? Then the attendant told him, everyone, including you and me, sooner or later, we will grow old. That's why he knew. If this physical body and mind is me, I have a problem. My problem is, I cannot stop aging. When aging comes to be, I will become miserable like that person I saw. Then when sickness comes, it can also be very traumatic. And he got no answer towards it. Then finally, everybody must die. So to him, the happiness, the joy that he received from the father, the four seasons, the four palaces, got no meaning anymore. Straight away, the wisdom is such. He knew these are all temporary, not real. Finally, he still has the problem of going to old age, sickness and death. That's why he went for, renounced the world, and left the palace in search for truth, for enlightenment. So if we attach to this physical body, we will have this worry, this fear. We will worry that this body will one day get old, get sick, and finally die. Like what Buddha Sakyamuni came to know. So when you have that awakening, you will tell yourself, this is serious. Humanity has this problem of birth, old age, sickness and death. But as he developed the meditative understanding, the cultivation, and finally when he awakened underneath the Bodhi tree, he realized clearly through his meditation awakening that this physical body is only an element, doesn't belong to him. And because it's element, the four elements, it will go the way of nature. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity. He straight away came to enlightenment, awakened. Then he is not deceived and deluded by the physical body and the consciousness, the four aspects of mind. All this he realized. They are conditioned arising, dependent originating, not a permanent unchanging entity where you can cling onto, hold onto and grasp onto and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. No such thing. So that is the essence of the Buddha's teaching. But to realize that is not easy. That's why his teaching is very unique. The moment you understand, your problem is gone, you are free. So if this physical body is not me, if this consciousness is not me, then the next question is, who are you? What are you? If they are not you, why did it arise within the form of mind, within you? That's what meditation is all about. You need to silence your mind to understand all this and awaken. The moment you awaken, then you become completely free. Liberated, different. Then you have so much joy. Because if this physical body and mind is not me, then I can use it to live life, to do whatever I want with it, with life. Then I don't have to worry about it getting old, getting sick and die. Then I will not be deluded by it, deceived by it. I will not attach and I will not cling. I use. So if this physical body is like a vehicle to take me around and to help me arise consciousness, I use it like my car. I don't go and worry about it. You can see the similarity around the analogy. Yeah. Then similarly, the consciousness. They are impermanent because they are dependent originating. No sense basis, no contact, no consciousness. No contact, no craving. That's why the dependent origination says. Then without ignorance, there is no mental activity. Because it's avijja paccaya sankhara. So all this the Buddha came to know after he awakened underneath the Bodhi tree. And his teaching is so easy, nothing complicated. What you need to do is just silence your mind and realize this truth. Understand what this truth is all about. And it's just so simple. And yet humanity cannot understand. And the funny thing about the world is they come out with so many meditation method, technique and object of meditation. Not to say method of or technique and object of meditation are bad. They are neither good or bad. But you must understand why do they use it. Because all these method, technique and object of meditation, they are not the meditation. They are just skillful means to allow you to train your mind, to anchor your mind, so that you can develop mindfulness, awareness within the moment, so that you can stabilize it to become heedful. Yeah, in the teaching, the Buddha under Dhammapada verse 21, 22 and 23 clearly stated under the Appamada Vaga, the section on heedfulness. The Buddha under verse 21 say, heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful never die, whereas the heedless are as if dead. So all of meditation points towards training the mind to be heedful. That's why the Buddha, before his passing away, Parinibbana, he advised the monk only one sentence. Strive on with heedfulness. Appamadena sampadita. He never asks you to do all those funny things. He just says, strive on with heedfulness. Train your mind to be heedful. Then you realize all of the method technique and even object of meditation is to anchor your mind so that your mind is on the object of meditation. All the method and technique are series of instructions for you to train your mind, to anchor your mind. But some of them use it to focus, to concentrate. That's why they go into all the concentration, thought-based meditation, or they call jhanas and all those things. Yeah, or samatha meditation. Whereas the emphasis by the Buddha is on vipassana or mindfulness, the four foundations of mindfulness. That's why under the Noble Eightfold Path, there is a power factor called samasati, which is the most powerful, the most important. And you have to have this in order to be heedful. To be heedful, the Buddha said under Dhammapada verse 23, is to be constantly meditative and ever mindful. Ever mindful is one of the two criteria. Then constantly meditative means constantly using this mind that is constantly aware or ever mindful to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Because the meditation as taught by the Buddha is the Noble Eightfold Path. Why do we meditate? We ask ourselves. We meditate to become? To become what? Why do you meditate? Huh? Why do you meditate? To awaken, isn't it? To become enlightened, isn't it? So under the Four Noble Truths, which is the Noble Truth that explains to you that you can become enlightened? Which is the one? The fourth noble truth. Where the Buddha say, if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering, which is the enlightenment. That's why this is the meditation. So whatever you do in the name of meditation, whatever object, method or technique, if it doesn't bring you back to the Noble Eightfold Path and make you noble ones, because these are all the Noble Eightfold Path, noble quality of an enlightened being. Of a noble being. If you don't have all this quality, then that meditation is not the teaching of the Buddha. It's just so simple and so direct. So this shows to you very clearly, whatever you do, don't be gullible. If it doesn't bring you back to heedfulness, forget about it. It's not going to take you anywhere. If it helps you to train your mind to be heedful, then that is the real meditation. But when it is already heedful, he must teach you how to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Not go and focus, concentrate and do the funny thing. That has nothing to do with the real meditation. You cannot be mindful in the midst of life, heedful in the midst of life. Develop the daily mindfulness to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. Then that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Always remember that. Otherwise, living beings become gullible. I always hear people say, "Wow, this one, the teacher so good, that one so good. They can do this, they can do that." But did you check? Is it according to the salutation of the Dhamma? Is it according to the Appamattavagga? Does it bring you back to the Noble Eightfold Path? And how deep an understanding is the Noble Eightfold Path? What are the three right views? And how did the first right view bring about the advice of the Buddha to cultivate all this? If all this cannot be explained to you, then forget about it. Because it is not the teaching. It is doing meditation in the name of meditation, but not with understanding. Then you become gullible. And they can tell you a lot of other things. This one can read mind. This one can fly through air and other things. Develop the psychic. Then it makes you very, very special. You can see light. You can see nimitta. You can manifest this way, that way. You can see your past life. You become very, very gullible, attracted. So this is something that cultivator have to reflect, contemplate. That's why if you don't reflect and contemplate, you can be gullible and you will debate. Because these are very beguiling. You know what is beguiling? It attracts you. Because people like this type of thing. To them it's very, very special, very magical. That's why you go and ask all those who don't understand the teaching. First thing you say you are a meditator, they will ask you, "Can you levitate? Can you fly? Can you meditate until you become like, can do magic? Can float on water? Can walk across the river?" This is not meditation. The Buddha never asked you to do all these things. He even prohibited the monk from executing them if they have the capacity. So what is important is the teaching is about developing the insight, the wisdom, the awakening, the realization. Nothing free you, always remember, except wisdom. Whatever they teach you, if it's knowledge and thought-based, forget about it. Because you are going to waste your time, I tell you. So when you are very clear about the path, you can relate back to the teaching. And the teaching is very clear. That's why I say pariyatti is very important. When you are clear about the teaching, phase one of Dhamma, the learning of the teaching, then you put it into practice, it becomes so clear, so easy. Whatever they teach you, it doesn't train your mind to be heedful, to be ever mindful, to realize Appamatta, forget about it. That is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. But if it leads you back to heedfulness, then use that heedfulness to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, then yes, by all means, rejoice, sadhu, and learn, and diligently cultivate. So, finally, is stability of daily mindfulness leading to heedfulness to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. There is no other shortcut. Don't go and be gullible. Because recently, got a few people come and ask me this and that. Then I just explain, very simple. I say, whatever people tell you, you check yourself. No need to become gullible. Otherwise, you can become gullible, attracted to too many things. And when you are attracted to too many things without the understanding, you are not focused. When you are not focused, chances of deviation is very, very high. Okay? Okay, now we can go into the Dhamma proper. Yeah? Yeah. So that summary I given you is very important. Yeah. And if you understand that part, you will know the cultivation very clearly. And you will progress very fast. Yeah. Then the other essential Dhamma become very clear to you. Okay, now I read on. So page 298, foundation of Buddhism, we have finished the first part. The Four Noble Truths, which are the Buddha, which the Buddha himself discovered or realized and revealed to the world, are the chief characteristics and the unshakable foundation of Buddhism. That's why we call it the essence of his teaching. They are suffering. Then in bracket he put the reason. Oh, this one, what word is it? Ditto, dieta of Buddhism. Is it the essence? It's cause, that is craving. It's end, that is nibbana. Yeah. Means the highest. Sumam, how to pronounce it? Sumam bonum. Sumam bonum of Buddhism. I think this is a Pali word. And they also call it the middle way. That's why the Noble Eightfold Path is also called the middle way. The first three represent the philosophy of Buddhism, while the fourth represent the ethics of Buddhism in accordance with that philosophy. So this is the author's way of classification. You see, the first three, according to this author, represent the first three noble truths, represent the philosophy of Buddhism. Means like philosophy. They call, when you talk about philosophy, what's your philosophy of life? Means what is your understanding of life? But to those who understand, for me, I don't call it the philosophy, because this Four Noble Truths is very unique. I call it the secret of life. When you understand them, when you awaken to them, you understand all of life. And not only the mundane life. Life got two aspects, mundane and the supramundane. So like what I wrote on the chart, the whiteboard, I show it to you. This is based on the earlier notes. So Buddhism is the teaching of the Buddha. And the teaching of the Buddha, they call it his Dhamma. Okay? So Dhamma is truth. That's why he teaches truth. Dhamma. Nature's truth. And the essence of his teaching is noble truth. That's why four noble truth. So when you understand this Dhamma, the four noble truth, you will understand his teaching completely. Because from the Four Noble Truths, all of his other teaching, the essential Dhamma, whatever aspect of the Buddhist teaching that you have read or studied, I can show it to you where it comes from. It's never apart from the Four Noble Truths. Because the Four Noble Truths is very complete. The three powerful right view, followed by all the Noble Eightfold Path, path factors. Then also the Four Noble Truths together explain to you all of life. That's the reason why I say when you understand the teaching, the Dhamma, you understand the secret of life. And this secret of life has two aspects, mundane and the supramundane. In this way, it's easy to understand. So of the Four Noble Truths, we have gone through, first noble truth is what? The noble truth of dukkha. We which a lot of you all call suffering. Yeah? Dukkha, then samudaya. Cause of suffering. The third one is what? No. You can say cessation, but that is the final one. Dukkha, samudaya, niroda. Niroda. Then, marga. So I have to explain this. Eh? Just how he said, this tree is the philosophy, and this is the ethic. Yeah. It depends on how you phrase it. But to me, that way is not a good way of understanding the teaching. Because the Buddha's teaching is, when you understand his teaching, you understand the secret of life. Both the mundane and supramundane. And what I want to show you is the mundane and the supramundane. So now we come to the first noble truth of dukkha. What did the Buddha proclaim? This noble truth of dukkha that the Buddha proclaimed is very powerful. It talks about the realities of life and existence. Realities of life and existence. Because we live in the conditioned world. So everything that you experience within the conditioned world, these are life's reality. And this one go the way of nature. It follows nature's law. And there are five great universal order, nature's law, that governs all life and existence. According to the Buddha, they are called the Pancha Niyamas. Pancha Niyamas got two aspects. First aspect is scientific. Scientific is the Utu Niyama, physical order of nature. Then we got biological order of nature. So these two are scientific. The scientists understand these two laws very well. That's why they are very advanced recently in the field of technology, science and technology, even mathematics and all those things. So scientific field, mathematical field and all those things, even medicine. So physics, chemistry, biology all are under this. Even botany and all these things. Then the other three laws, they are called the spiritual law of nature. The Buddha called it karma niyama, law of karma. Then law of mind, citta niyama. Then the final one is law of truth, dhamma niyama. These three spiritual laws, they are as powerful as the physical law of nature or scientific law. So the Buddha being an expert in the three spiritual law, that's why he is a very unique being. And because of that, he also come to understand the spiritual aspect of life. He reached the pinnacle of it. He perfected them all. That's why he understands both the mundane and the supramundane, whereas the scientists are still within the conditioned world, the mundane. Even the thought process, psychology, all things, they haven't penetrated deep enough. Whereas the Buddha has penetrated the whole of consciousness, the mundane and the supramundane. That's why it leads to the unconditioned, which is not known to the scientists. So this aspect, the reality of life and existence, the Buddha said, in life, you go through life, you live life long enough, you will experience this eight reality, he said. And nothing is apart from this eight reality. Yeah. You can tell me anything. I will name it for you within this eight reality. So in the times of the Buddha, he called it, the first four is birth, old age, sickness and death. He said, these are reality of life and existence. If you go through life, you live life long enough, you will have to come to confront birth, old age, sickness and death. That's why in the five daily contemplation, he keep on reminding the monks, the lay devotee. He said you have to contemplate and reflect every day to understand the first noble truth, to break free from the self-delusion, so that you are not trapped, so that you will not be gullible. So this first noble truth reality, the first four, birth, old age, sickness and death, under the five daily contemplation, the first three is linked to this. He said, this body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. For it has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. And the reason being is made up of element. It's not you, not real. Dependent originating, condition arising, go the way of nature. That's why when you understand this, contemplate and reflect until very clear, then you come to know that this body doesn't belong to you because it's only an element, no knowing. And this element goes the way of nature following physical law, the biological law. And because of that, you will not be deceived by it, deluded by it. You will not grasp onto it, hold onto it and say, this is me, this is I. That's why it's very powerful. So this first noble truth reality, the first four, you already encounter. In modern term, we can call it getting old. Yeah? Means aging. As you become old, your senses will fail you. Your organs will fail you. You will develop a lot of sickness, disease. You become very weak, very fragile. Even your vision, everything will fail you. Your physical body will fail you. Your senses will all deteriorate. Yeah. But nowadays, because of medical science, yeah, a lot of things are changeable now. Yeah? But you have to pay for it. Yeah? They call it the parts, the spare part. Yeah? But not like car. Car, the whole car, they can assemble for you a new one. Yeah? But your physical body cannot. Even heart transplant is very difficult. You have to have a donor. And you have to check a lot of things, even kidney transplant. And they are trying to do a consciousness transplant. You heard of it in India? Huh? You didn't hear about it? They say if your body is about to die, they say they have, don't know true or not, they say Indian people say, they say they have breakthrough. The rich people are paying a lot to transplant their consciousness into another body. Then you take over that body. You have seen all this, but the cinema show consciousness went in and take over your body. Matrix. You saw Matrix, or not? You didn't see Matrix, huh? What very old show, way ahead of time. Even now, we haven't reached that technology yet. You know, Matrix say, when the sun is no more, our solar system, when the sun is no more, how to exist? How can you continue without the sun's energy? Everything needs the sun's energy. He said, no need. You know what they did or not? They go and all this, what they call sperm and ovum, that have the consciousness, they use science to go and create a lot of this. Then they create the virtual world. So all this consciousness that is actually in this organism that's supposed to have its own life, they put in a like an incubator like that, where they have they feed you with all the nutrient, everything. So like the fetus, the baby, grow, but never take birth and come out. Understand now? And they can connect all this up. The life force energy. They connect all this up. Now they have that type of technology that can power the world, create the virtual world. And the virtual world is exactly like you living in this world, conditioned world. But they have this creator, like the administrator, who do the control of the program and all those things, or the system analyst. So this flow is a special creation. This one can go into any of the virtual world's human being. He can just take over your body, like go in. Then he make use of your body. Then when you kill, the body killed, he take another one. They say he never die. That is what matrix is all about. And finally, no, it's not a show, it's a futuristic thing. And I like that show because it's possible. It's not a what they call, you think it's like very, very, like you call what, like cannot be like that one. Friction. You call it friction. It's not friction, I tell you. It can happen, but may not be actually the way they think. It's different. Yeah. Because when this, what is his name, that guy that act on the show? He's a Buddhist, you know, not? Huh? He's a very famous Buddhist, you know. What is his name, really? This guy, he's a Buddhist, and he understands. That's why later on they say he is the chosen one. That can free mankind from all this. But there are a few of these scientists who, during the early time, they also very intelligent. They knew what these people are doing, means the government. Understand? So they don't want to be caught by them. They break off. Then they also got that type of machine that can allow them to go into the virtual world. Means like these people. But these people are tracking them. They are like fugitive like that. So that show is very interesting. Anyway, don't waste time. Otherwise, not enough time. So we go into this. So what they do is the energy that they collect through all those, they don't need the sun. Because this life force energy is enough to use to power the creation and all those things. So what I'm trying to tell you is the mundane and the supramundane, there are a lot of things inside that. But our civilization has not reached that sophistication, the level of sophistication. So that's why we may think we are very advanced. But compare to the advanced civilization, we are actually still very primitive. There is still a lot more things. But from now onward, our scientific, technological understanding will grow very fast, will move very fast. That if consciousness can catch up, we will become a super race. They call it a super being, special being. Then later on, we don't need the physical body. We can exist in consciousness. You don't laugh. The what? Star Wars. Obi-Wan. That one, like a creature like that one, but a very wise one. They call him the wise one. His consciousness is very powerful. Okay, now we go on. So this reality of life existence, the first four is birth, always sickness and death. Then the Buddha said the fifth one is very powerful. Separation from loved ones. So it will connect everything. Loved one and prized possession that you cling on to, hold on to, and grasp on to dearly. You think they belong to you because you think you exist. You think they are your loved ones. But they are also subject to birth, old age, sickness, and death. That's why separation will come. When conditions cease to be, that form and mind will cease to be, and you call death. Even your own life, form and mind, when conditions cease to be, you will also cease. Then when your identity erased, you are in no position to own anything. That's why there is no reality. You cannot own anything. Because you yourself is impermanent, condition arising. How can you own anything? That's why the Buddha in the Dhammapada verse, he said, my son, my wealth, my property, this only the fools lament. For that very body also don't belong to him. Wherein son, wherein wealth, wherein property and other things. So this teaching is very profound. So when you understand all this, then you know these are all condition arising, dependent origin. They are only there when condition exists. When condition is there, it will sustain itself. It will look like you own. But when condition cease to be, everything ceases to be. So this separation can happen in many ways through death. And death can also happen in many ways. Murder, disease, natural death, even tsunami, building collapse, war, riot, kidnap, and all these things. So nature's disaster, even earthquake, flood, tsunami, and all those things, they are very common. And all this can bring about separation, even wartime and all those things. Then because of poverty. So during what they call period of uncertainty. Yeah. Then later on, economic crisis, we have seen many. When it happened, it wiped off a lot of people's wealth. Their business, their wealth, they all overnight is gone. And sometimes you make a wrong decision, a bad call in your whatever investment or listed company and all those things. Then it lead to problem. Then people take over. Or you have cash flow problem. You become bankrupt. Or people deceive you, cheat you. Then you get involved in all those, what they call, cepat kaya type of scheme. Scam and all those things. So all this can lead to the fifth reality happening. Then sometimes when relationship also, relationship failure lead to divorce, separation. Even boyfriend, girlfriend, very severe, very traumatic. And these are reality of life and existence. You can never, never say it cannot happen. Then the sixth one is when you are with people whom you don't like. Yeah. That one is very common too. Yeah. Even the school children, they go into school with have bullies and gangsterism and all those things. Then when you are in your working condition, career environment, you have to face your superior, your boss. Not easy. Some of them are very difficult. Then sometimes your in-law, your step-parents, or even your difficult friends. Because these are people who can make life difficult for you. Then when you confront them with fear, worry, anxiety, especially in the career environment, now the youngsters stress out very fast because they have this deadline target, especially those involved in banking, sales, and all those things. They got target for you. Yeah. Then when you cannot meet the target, you are under tremendous pressure and stress. Then that fear, that worry, the anxiety, that's why a lot of them went into depression. And recently, our Thursday class, there were so many. And they were very young. One of them, 39 years old, is it? He only came to this world for 29 years. Half of that period, he said, is in depression. He suicidal thought every day. And he was searching for people to help him. Until recently, he came. And somehow, he bumped into us. Met me. Then he came out of it. And now he's completely different, transformed. He actually came out of it and become very beautiful. Yeah. So all this is because of the teaching of the Buddha, nothing else. That's why when you understand this teaching, you understand the secret of life, you can free your mind. Then you can live life to the fullest. Yeah. Okay, so the seventh reality is when you cannot get what you want, when things don't go your way, when the expectations in life are not met. You expect to be promoted, you are not promoted. You expect your loved one, your brother, sister, your parent to understand you. But then, it's the other way around. Well, they also expect you to understand them. So misunderstanding can happen. So when you cannot get what you want, when your craving, your desire are not met, your expectation in life is very high. You expect to do well in the exam. The result come out otherwise. What happened? Then you expect your wife to be very sincere, or your spouse to be very, they call what, means like loyal to you. What do they call that? That trust that you have. If they breach that trust, what happens? It becomes traumatic, isn't it? So all this is what the teaching is about, the realities of life and existence. Then after that, he put in the final summary. He said, in short, when you deludedly attach and cling to your five aggregate of form and mind, suffering is the result. And that one will cover everything else. Yeah. I explained to you the first aspect. When you attach to the physical body, you suffer. If you attach to what you perceive, also you suffer. Who are the one you perceive? Your loved one, your possession. Everything that you think you own, everything that you think is real. When it is otherwise, you will suffer. Because they also subject to old age, sickness and death. They also subject to disease. And they also subject to all the realities that the Buddha talk about. So this reality, when you go through life, you will know. Yeah. Human beings got a lot of delusion. That's why they worry a lot. Yeah. And because of their worry, their attachment, their anxiety, their fear, their scars of memory, their phobia, all this make them miserable. Yeah. So all this reality can come and haunt you, the Buddha said, if you don't understand this teaching. True delusion, if you are to grasp and cling. Then the second noble truth is very beautiful. Explain to you the cause of suffering. He said the cause of suffering is nothing else but your self-delusion, that condition, the craving, the attachment, the clinging, the grasping for you to hold. And craving can be a few types, positive and negative craving. That's why like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. These are the evil roots of greed and hatred. Then there is also this, what they call sensual craving, craving of the senses. So when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile, feel or think, you will have positive craving and negative craving. That's a like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. So they call this sensual desire and ill will, which are your first two of the five mental hindrances. So throughout the day, when you don't understand this second noble truth, the cause of suffering, which is craving, then you create the mental hindrance of like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. And this becomes habitual. Because every day you do it, every moment of consciousness you do it, until you become habitual. Then this habitual tendency create the mental hindrance and hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. That's why you cannot be peaceful, you cannot be aware. You cannot have the silent mind. It's because of that. Then your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation lead to restlessness of mind. Your mind becomes restless, not calm, not peaceful. Because you worry. You project your thought. You worry you might die. You worry that this disease might become what they call like very serious. What is that? Let's say cancer, they will do a biopsy. If it's positive, what you call that? There's a word for it, isn't it? Malignant. So, you're very scared now. What happened really, the doctor after the biopsy confirmed that it's malignant? Then that fear will intensify. Then you have this intense fear, which is very traumatic. First thing first, you're scared you will die. Then the doctor will tell you, fourth stage, you got 3 months, 6 months. I tell you, if you don't have the Dhamma, you will panic. Then not only that, he tell you, you have to go for chemo, and it's not cheap. And some doctor didn't even explain to you what the procedure is about. Because before you take the chemo, I tell you, you have to be mentally prepared. Because it will kill and destroy all of your cells, good and bad, depending on what type of dosage and what type of chemo drug they are giving you. Sometimes they give you the wrong one. They kill the wrong one. And you don't know. Because they are medical doctors, oncology. But you don't know. But if the right one, find the correct one, you recover very fast. But there are so many, you know, That's why they also try. And the worst is, if they are not ethical, you know what they do? Which one profit margin higher? Then they will ask you, you want a cheap one or a more expensive one? And when they know you can afford, they give you all the full range. And because you kiasu, you go for the most expensive one. And the choice is not which one help you, which one is the correct one for you. You need to have that skill. And most of them are trying out, but they are not trying on themselves. Understand? They are trying on you. Not only guinea pig, like they sell you insurance. The one with the highest commission, they will sell it to you. Yeah, this is good. Good for you. But actually, it's good for him, commission-wise. So, when there is selfishness behind, a lot of things they do is different. They compromise. That's why when you start to compromise, it's like corruption. You destroy yourself. You destroy the world, humanity, the country, everything. Yeah. So this is something that you need to develop the understanding. So the cause of suffering is very important. Craving, born of self-delusion. So when you know this, you have to meditate to understand why the Buddha said the physical body and mind is not you. You have to see its universal characteristics of impermanence, insight into it, and understand that everything within the form and mind, because it is with the form and mind that the phenomenal world come to be, life, existence come to be. That's the reason why the Buddha said our mind, our consciousness, is the forerunner of all things. Understand? When mind arises, everything arises. So the whole of life is within your own consciousness, nowhere else. If you are deluded and deceived by it, you will suffer. You will become miserable. So this one is a very powerful second noble truth. When you understand the cause and you understand what suffering is, it's already easy for you to come out of it, isn't it? You will know how to manage your life better, isn't it? If I know this is suffering and this is the cause, what must I do? I must develop the wisdom not to be deceived by it. Understand? Like now in the paper, every day they write about what? All the scam, Bank Negara warn you, understand? The gold billion or whatever, or even what PTPR, what Penang one, everywhere. So, you know about it, you have been warned, and yet a lot of people fall victim. Understand? Why? Greed. Understand? Past karma. The last time you also did this to people, you could not pay. That's why you don't take care of karma, nothing can help you. Then sometimes they even tell you, I don't know what, like Chong Kong Tao, is it? Oh, like kena cham, is it? Already heard all this, and yet kena. It's not kena cham. It's because of karmic, understand? That's why when it comes, your consciousness become different. It will condition you and make you afflicted. So these two, first and second noble truth, will allow you to manage your life better. That if you really want to free, the Buddha said you have to go into the third noble truth. The Buddha said, suffering need not be. Suffering is only there when you don't have this understanding, this wisdom. So suffering need not be means there is a noble truth that explains to you clearly that enlightenment in the here and the now before you die is possible. That's why Nibbana is possible. And this is a noble truth. And this will give you hope. Show you the light at the end of the tunnel. That you have a way out of suffering. And the Buddha never end there. No. He never tell you this is possible and stop. He go on. He said there is a path, Magga. Namely, Noble Eightfold Path. If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering and the realization of Nibbana. This is the answer. This is the solution. That's why we all meditate to realize this. That's why whatever meditation you do, if it doesn't bring you back to heedfulness, to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, forget about it. Then that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Okay? Oh, another 5 minutes, just nice. So this part, I hope, you all are clear. So this is the essence of his teaching. So what I see here is first and second noble truth is the mundane aspect of life. Okay? The third noble truth is the supramundane, means the realization of Nibbana, the unconditioned. Then the fourth one is involving the mundane to realize the supramundane. You understand? Yeah? So first two, mundane. Then this one, supramundane. Then this last one is the cultivation. From mundane cultivation leading to the supramundane. Yeah. And to do that, you must not use thought. You have to use mindfulness, sati. Yeah. Okay? Any question so far? Any question? Well, I have a drink. Is it clear? You have to tell me. If you don't understand, you better tell me. Huh? No question. Okay, I read on a bit more. Huh? All these four truths which comprise the Dhamma of the Buddha are dependent on this body itself. They are incontrovertible facts, wholly associated with man and other beings. Whether the Buddha arises or not, truth exists in the universe. It is the Buddha that reveals them to the world. So the Dhamma, which is truth, is already there even before the arising of Sammasambuddha. Means these truths are within nature. These are nature's law. That's why they are already there before him. So this is the aspect that you have to understand. That's why truth cannot be monopolized. Because truth is whatever reality that can explain the way things are. And the only reality that can explain the way things are the nature's law that governs life and existence, nothing else. That's why that is the Dhamma, that is the truth. That's why this teaching is very, very powerful, very comprehensive. And it can lead you to the pinnacle of wisdom and understanding of life. It can even bring you to the possibility of realizing the supramundane, the unconditioned, your true nature, your Buddha nature or oneness nature and all this. Then we go on. Eh? Buddhism rests on the pivot of suffering. Although Buddhism emphasizes the existence of suffering, yet it does not follow that Buddhism is a pessimistic religion. This one, I think the author don't know how to explain. The Buddha didn't rest on the pivot of suffering. The Buddha just proclaimed this noble truth of suffering. He said, there is a noble truth that explains to you clearly the prevalence of suffering. Suffering is everywhere in the midst of life and existence. Because this is our life reality, the first noble truth. And without wisdom, the Buddha said, suffering will arise. He never said life is suffering. He said without wisdom, when you confront this eight reality, you will be afflicted. And what he's trying to tell you is this is a common reality. Not only you are subject to it. All of living beings, including the non-humans, and all of human beings, they are subject to all this. You live life long enough, the eighth reality, you have to confront them. And when you confront them, the only difference between the one that suffer and the one that doesn't suffer is the understanding of it. If you don't have the understanding, you will suffer. Oh, 10:30 already. Yeah? I just finished this part then. Maybe we can stop. I think one more paragraph to go. One would be justified in calling the Buddha a pessimist if he had merely emphasize the truth of suffering without suggesting a means to end suffering and gain eternal happiness. This word eternal happiness is not correct, huh? Because when you realize enlightenment, Nibbana, there is nothing to be happy about. Yeah, it's not a conditional. It got nothing to do with mental states. Yeah. The Buddha perceived the universality of sorrow and prescribed a remedy for this universal sickness of humanity. The highest conceivable happiness, according to the Buddha, is Nibbana, which is total extinction of suffering. So here they got confused, because in the Pali teaching, there is this Pali sentence. They say, Nibbana paramang sukang. Nibbana is the highest. They use the word happiness. Sukang is actually the highest peace. Peace. Because cessation of form and mind, understand? Tranquility, stillness, then even the pure awareness also cease. That's why there is no more of this type of sensation, or even the slightest, most subtle type of mental state. Even you talk about bliss, happiness, peacefulness, stillness, all this will cease. That's why it's not what you think. In that sense, it's the highest peace. Understand? Because nothing to feel anymore, nothing to experience anymore. Complete cessation, complete ending of suffering. That's why it's the highest. Nothing within the condition world can touch it. Even the pure awareness, the present moment, is still something inside there. Understand? That consciousness is still there. You have not transcended birth and death. The moment is still within the condition world. The present moment. So that is where people cannot develop the understanding. Okay, the author of the article on pessimism in the encyclopedia. Oh, they have it in the encyclopedia. So pessimism denotes an attitude of hopelessness towards life, a vague general opinion that pain and evil predominate in the human condition or affair. The original doctrine of the Buddha is, in fact, as optimistic as any optimism of the West. To call it pessimism is merely to apply to it a characteristically Western principle according to which happiness is impossible without the personality. The true Buddhists look forward with enthusiasm to absorption into eternal bliss. So these two are trying to argue, but I think both also have problem, because both also don't really understand what the Buddha meant. The Buddha already in his teaching mentioned, if there does not exist the unconditioned, escape from the conditioned world is impossible. You heard of this in the teaching, isn't it? And it's written there, isn't it? So why are they arguing? Because to the Western philosopher, you know what they say? They say, what nonsense is this? Nonsense. You say, if I don't exist, how can I enjoy happiness? Understand? I need to exist to enjoy happiness, isn't it? True or not, Yunjian? Logical or not? Very logical, isn't it? Then what does the Buddha mean when he say nonsense? And now I ask you. Correct. So, what does this two person trying to tell you? You have to understand that the form of mind is the form of mind. Understand? The enlightenment that the Buddha realized is completely different. That is out of the conditioned world. That's how he becomes satisfied after he sat underneath the Bodhi tree. But he knew this cessation of form and mind, the realization of the unconditioned, liberates completely. Mo sao meya, you understand? Not? No more rebirth, understand? No more coming back, understand? Not? That is the complete liberation. But what they are trying to argue is with the mundane mind, understand not? That's why the mundane mind will cling on to this atta. Otherwise, how can I enjoy peace? Understand not? The highest happiness. So a lot of people say, if I got money, I eat the best food, the most delicious, I will be very happy. Every day ask you to eat the same food, see whether you're happy or not. You will get fed up of it, isn't it? And like Shakespeare, what did Shakespeare say? Huh? The spices of life. You haven't heard of Shakespeare. That's why he said, don't always eat the same thing or have the same thing. He said, the spices of life. You know what are spices? You add everything, a variety. Oh, yeah, PG can remember. Variety is the spice of life. Oh. Shakespeare. We always call him William Shakespeare. Shakespeare. And I like his literature. If music is the food of love, play on. Nice, huh? That's why you want to listen to music. It's the food of love. It makes you feel good, especially sentimental music. Oh, it can really bring you to the heavenly realm. But if you play the sad music, what happens? You also become emotional. Especially last time during the olden day, the Mandarin song, a lot of this type of thing. Han le yap kwat la, teng ko mo? Hen ni zu ku. Wo hai hen. Oh, this type of song. Not so good. Then he say, forget about it. Wang liao ba, hai xiang ta yu yu zu mo yong. Can you remember that? Oh, you don't know Mandarin. He said, forget about it. Think of him or her for what? So all this, you can see society's behavior, except from the song they sing. Means a lot of them are deeply hurt in relationship. That's why you got all this, 爱你一万倍. You understand the meaning or not? 爱你 means love you. 一万倍, 10,000 times. So he said, I love you not enough. Repeat 10,000 times. So all this type of song came off. Okay, I think we end. Okay, so we end at page. You only finish 1¾ page. So you still. Sadhu. So we still got next Tuesday, hopefully on the 8th of February you all want to come. Better come. Then we can do our chanting. A lot of them go back to vote. So I wish you all go back and vote if you are outstation voter. I think the condition this time is very probable. A lot of things can happen because of the maturity of the rakyat's thinking. Okay. So now we will do the sharing of marriage, transfer of marriage. And today, remind me to chant the Devo Vasatukalena. Invoke the blessing of all these merits for the righteous, what they call the king. Okay, for those who are new, it's on page 15. We are going to chant the first stanza. Then after that, we jump to the fourth. Then after the fourth, we jump to the last one. We repeat 3 times. Idang minya tinang ho tu. Then we go to page 16. We jump to patana. Okay, blessing for the world. Okay, let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed over the past 2 hours plus. And let us now share all this merits with all beings, starting with the demons. akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu lokasasana ittavata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo devo asatukhalena sasa sampati heto cha fito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko idang imena punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Then let me repeat the Devo Vasudha Kalena in English, yeah? The translation, so that you all understand. May the rain fall in due season, and may there be a good harvest and good fortune all around the world. May the government be prosperous and peaceful. May the world be prosperous and peaceful always. May the government, the king and the rulers always be righteous. Yeah. So that is the meaning. Okay, so now you can pay respect.